From the Bayou City, Houston, Texas, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM, originating from the studios tonight of KTRH News Radio 740. What a time we have had in Houston. I'll tell you about that in just a moment. But later tonight, almost Full Moon Friday, open lines. I say that because it's officially full moons tomorrow, full moon, but we're going to call it tonight. And Tommy and I came up to Houston for a major event. We had just a wonderful time. 1,300 people here. And the people in Houston are absolutely gracious, as they are all around the United States. And, of course, it was a three-hour flight from Los Angeles to Houston. So Tom and I, producer Tom, brought our portable DVD players. And, of course, I watched Charlton Heston's cartoon. That'll tell you where I come from, a little history there for me. Tommy took Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. That'll tell you where his head is directed. Here's some of the news of the day, then we'll get into our special guest this hour. Common children's cold and cough medicines are coming under scrutiny from federal drug regulators who say the remedies and the recommended doses have not been studied enough in children. This is a big story. Dr. Charles Ganley, who is a top Food and Drug Administration official, says the agency was revisiting the risks and benefits of the use of these drugs in children, especially those younger than 2 years old. Most over-the-counter cold and cough medicines have been insufficiently tested in children, they say. So if your little child has a cold and the doctor recommends this, talk to him about the study and the story you just heard. A deadly winter storm just walloped parts of the plains and Midwest, keeping highways and schools closed, knocking out power and piling up huge snowdrifts on Friday. At least six storm-related deaths have been reported in the region since the snowfall began on Wednesday. Blizzard conditions shut down roads in Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, leaving some areas with well over a foot of snow by Friday morning. The storm was part of a larger line of thunderstorms and snowstorms that stretched from Minnesota to the Gulf. Tornadoes killed 20 people in Missouri, Georgia, Alabama, including eight students in an Alabama high school. The most comprehensive weather study ever has confirmed what we all know, that the weather really is worse on the weekends. I don't know why, but meteorologists evaluated 6.3 million pieces of climate data from all across Europe between 1990 and 2005. Their conclusion: on weekends, the weather is worse than on weekdays. They found that Wednesdays have the highest average temperatures, Saturdays are the lowest, Monday was the driest day, and Saturday definitely the wettest. Simultaneous warming on Earth and Mars suggests that our planet's recent climate changes have a natural and not a human-induced cause, according to a Russian scientist theory. In 2005, data from NASA's Mars Global Surveyor and Odyssey missions reveal that the carbon dioxide ice caps near Mars' South Pole have been diminishing for three summers in a row. The Russian scientist says, hey, the Mars data is evidence that the current global warming on Earth is being caused by changes with the sun. The International Cassini spacecraft has beamed back to Earth never-before-seen angles of Saturn from high above and below its majestic rings. If you have a computer, go to the coasttocoastam.com website, look under the feature story, and look at the dazzling new photographs of Saturn. And the moon will turn shades of amber and crimson Saturday night as it passes behind the Earth's shadow in the first total lunar eclipse in 3 years. The eclipse will be at least partly visible from Asia to the Americas, although those in Europe, Africa, and the Middle East will have the best view. In a moment, we're going to talk with our science advisor, head of the EnterpriseMission.com, Richard C. Hoagland, about all things space in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie, definitely deep in the heart of Texas at the studios of KTRH, where we had a major event tonight. And as I said, 1,300 people showed up at the Verizon Theater. Had just a wonderful time just talking about the program and answering questions. And we did a little book signing for people who came by. Had an opportunity to see my cousin and her two kids. And just a great time. But we're back here now, ready to do the program for you. And don't forget, a little bit later on, we'll have our sort of full moon open lines for you. Richard C. Hoagland, of course, heads up the enterprisemission.com. And there are so many things going on in space this week. I thought it'd be a good idea to bring him in this hour. We'll open up the phone lines with Richard in about 20 minutes or so. Richard, how are you, my friend?
Good evening, George. You're in one of my old stomping grounds, good old Houston, Texas.
You know, this is a great city, and I had been here very briefly many years ago. It looks like the place is brand new. I mean, buildings have popped up. It's an affluent city, but I mean,
it's
clean.
Texas oil money.
Yeah, it is.
They've
done a great job.
To the Johnson Space Center?
No, I have not. I haven't had that kind of time. Tom and I flew in early today. Just got back from the event about an hour or so ago, and you know, we're here doing the program, and then I'm back in Los Angeles tomorrow morning. So it's a bang bang day, but I've got to come back again and spend some time here.
It would be cool if you went down there. There's a lot of really great people in NASA, and you get to meet them when you get outside Washington. And of course, that's one of the new headquarters, old headquarters for the new Return to the Moon and On to Mars part of NASA's program, which obviously I'm very interested in.
I am going to throw a lot of things your way this hour. One, of course, is I want to get your reaction to this Russian scientist who says that global, I might as well get your hat in the ring on this one way or another.
Okay.
Global warming is natural. It is not human-induced. It's because of the sun. Now, that's his theory. How about you? You've had a chance to look at a lot of different people. You've read a lot of reports from various scientists and experts and climatologists. What do you say?
Well, that was a report that came out through the National Geographic earlier this week, and I was kind of intrigued that a mainstream news organization like the Geographic, which covers everything from geology to exploration to climatology to, you know, the latest bandwagon of global warming, would actually cite him and list some of his papers. I don't think he's correct in one sense. He says it's natural. You think it's a cycle.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a cycle. I think it's a hyperdimensional cycle. I think what we're doing with fossil fuels and carbon and methane emissions and all that is exacerbating a problem which already exists, and it's only making it worse. But I think that he's right for the wrong reasons, because he's looking at the sun as the culprit. The problem is, if you look at solar data, I mean, he cited, I believe, three Martian seasons of melting at the Martian polar caps.
Right.
We discussed this on our show, David Wilcox and I, who did a series called Interplanetary Weather, that was kind of loosely based around some of the ideas in Art and Whitley's book, you know, Global Coming Superstorm.
Mm-hmm.
And we looked at all kinds of mainstream data from all across the solar system, not just Mars. And every planet that has an atmosphere, from Venus all the way out to Pluto, George, is experiencing global warming. They're all getting hotter.
Then Pluto, why aren't some of these other scientists agreeing with that?
Oh, yeah.
It is true. It's a fact. But they don't use that.
It is an absolute unacknowledged fact by the global warming crowd here on Earth, who for political reasons don't really want to talk about that for some reason. But in fact, all across the solar system, everything is getting warmer. Now, our model, our HD model, says this is part of a grand natural cycle of the solar system, which is coming up to a crescendo maybe as soon as 2012. It could be part of that ancient set of, you know, knowledge and prophecies from Mayans and other indigenous cultures.
Sure.
The fact is, we're looking at real data, real spacecraft, real telescope, real science here, and there's no question it's going on. It's just not been acknowledged in the mainstream until the Geographic a couple days ago chose to put forward this Russian climatologist's views and data, saying what we said on our show back in, I think it was 2004.
All right. So global warming has all kinds of possibilities. We're putting together a major roundtable discussion on it. I want you to be part of it. I want you to kind of look at it as the science advisor, okay?
Okay.
When we put this together, I may get someone like Lowell Ponte, who was on last night.
You know, I listened carefully to him last night.
He's tough.
He was, well, he's tough. He's accurate. He's incredibly political. I mean, he obviously has a political axe to grind against Al Gore.
Oh, he does not like Al Gore.
but doubt about that.
But good, honest, sharp-edged opinions are what makes democracy. So I was very pleased that he was sticking to his guns. He seems to have done his homework. It would be refreshing to have a really honest debate. And if you could get Al Gore in the mix, that would be super cool. I don't think with him it's going to happen. But
he will be invited.
That would be a very gracious thing to do, George.
We've got up on the Coast to Coast AM website the incredible pictures of Saturn. I assume you have them or will have them on the enterprisemission.com website.
We will, and I looked at them, and they are stunning. I mean, can you imagine that this spacecraft, the size of a Greyhound bus, has been orbiting Saturn now for, what, something like 2 years, maybe a little less, all by its little lonesome robotic control, taking these images with stunning long-focus telescopes, CCD cameras, like the kind of chips you have in any camera you'd buy over the counter at Costco, and it's sending back these astonishing, incredible panoramas. The thing I want everyone to look for when they get a chance to see the pictures, and I believe there are photos of the North Pole of Saturn, look for this incredible hexagonal geometric thing around the North Pole with straight edges.
What's the thing, Richard?
Well, the thing is a cloud formation which is twirling backwards at something like 300 miles per hour with the planet rotating forwards at, you know, 1,400. And it was spotted by the Voyager missions way back in the 80s. But they didn't go over the pole, so they had to put together this view from oblique shots rectified in the computer.
Mm-hmm.
This is now a stunning real polar view with the spacecraft Cassini, you know, tweaked up into this high polar orbit by going past Titan several times. And they have this stunning view looking down on the entire Saturn system. And you can see this incredible hexagonal feature around the pole, symmetrical, which is an incredible hyperdimensional signature of the physics we've just been describing all across the solar system, exemplifying itself in the Saturn system. I mean, you know, George, that the four big outer planets, forgetting Pluto and that whole controversy for a second, the four big outer planets are all emitting more energy than they are getting from the sun.
Isn't that bizarre?
Unless you understand hyperdimensional physics, in which case the answer where's that energy coming from is very obvious. It's coming into this dimension from another dimension. Leaping back to your guest last night, Chris Moon, and his electronic genius Frank's, you know, super box, which is pulling information, actual voices, coherent, intelligent transmissions from some other dimension, George. It's all part of a grand unified theory of everything. And as we're racing toward this nodal point of 2012, have you just looked around at just CNN? Just watch CNN for a few days and watch how everything is happening at an incredibly accelerated rate. The good guys are getting better, as I say, and the bad guys are getting worse. And problems that used to fester for years or sometimes a decade are being now resolved and confronted, and the bad guys are separated from the good guys within a matter of weeks or even days. For instance, look at this whole Walter Reed thing. Look at the rate at which that problem was brought out into public attention, addressed, people's heads are rolling, people are being fired, something is being done. These poor guys who sat for 3 years in misery, ignored by everybody in the chain of command, suddenly are commanding front and center, and it's part of an accelerating matrix that we're embedded in, George, as part of the HD model. It affects not only physics and planets, it also affects people and politics.
You know, I'm excited about these Cassini pictures, but I'm really excited about the possibilities of what we're going to see when we get some Europa pictures.
They flew the New Horizons spacecraft, which, as you know, launched about a little over a year ago for Pluto on an extraordinarily fast track. It's the fastest spacecraft that humans have ever sent anywhere. because it takes 8 years to get to Pluto. They sent it to Jupiter to make a left-hand turn and take advantage of what's a process called a gravitational slingshot, where you basically steal some energy from the huge mass and momentum of Jupiter, and you fling the spacecraft faster out toward Pluto than it normally would be traveling. They gain something like 9,000 miles per hour through this maneuver, and Jupiter fell toward the sun by the width, get this, George, the width of one hydrogen atom.
That's it.
Kraft, Eric, and I figured this out in a bowling alley back in 1971. But in other words, that's the momentum exchange.
You are a believer that under the seas of Europa, there could be some kind of life.
Right. And as the New Horizons spacecraft went through the Jovian system a couple days ago, it took a whole bunch of incredible new data and images and infrared and composition and all that. And then over the next several weeks, it's going to be playing that data back to Earth. And we're going to get even more remarkable images than we've had up to now, because it came closer than to some of these moons than the Galileo spacecraft did. Even though it was orbiting Jupiter, it had constraints, and they didn't want to go through the radiation belt, so it kind of hung out in the outskirts and didn't get the best pictures. Well, I've been focused on this moon, Europa, I think now for something like 24 years. I proposed in Star and Sky magazine back in 1980, I was the first one apparently to do this, that there would, A, be a liquid ocean under that ice, and in that liquid ocean, which could only be liquid if it had been liquid since the dawn of the solar system. If it had ever frozen, the calculations said it could not be thawed again. So if it was liquid, it had to be liquid from the beginning of everything that we understand in this system. And then by my logical reasoning, I said, okay, if Earth has had liquid water for about that period of time, which the science says it has, and it developed all this incredible diversity of life, if Europa was the only other place in the solar system with liquid water for an equivalent period of time, George, billions and billions of years, as my friend Carl might say, then what kind of incredible biological evolution in that ocean with those energy sources separated from Earth by, you know, half a billion miles could have taken place in those billions of years? So I forecast in this very long article, which is, by the way, on the Enterprise mission.com website, back in 1980, that when NASA got their act together and got spacecraft out to Jupiter and was able to investigate with orbiters and not just flybys, they would someday confirm, A, the liquid ocean, and B, that there was life in it. Well, the New Horizons spacecraft carried such interesting instruments that it may give us more information on the presence of that liquid ocean in the data that's going to be beamed back in the ensuing weeks.
So I have a surprise for you. You listened, of course, as you just mentioned, to the story about the telephone from the dead, Frank's
box.
Absolutely. You had sent me a very quick instant message about possibly going down to Coral Castle and to see if we could conjure up Edward Leedskullman with one of those phones.
Can I say something about that for a second?
Yeah.
Okay. It's not just Ed. You know, understand, I'm not looking to talk just to Ed Leedskullman.
Who you want to talk to?
If I'm right, if the HD model, the hyperdimensional physics model of literally information energy coming into this dimension from another dimension, and the relationship to where we go when we die, and where we are before we are born, George, I mean, there's nothing small about this model, then what Ed Leedskullman built in Coral Castle, you might think of as a telephone switching amplifier. Because I know from the measurements we have done there, looking at the transits and eclipses with the Accutron, that it amplifies enormously these HD signals. So my reasoning is that if you took a gadget like Frank's box, or Edison's, you know, telephone to the dead.
He never built it.
But
plans
he had,
out there somewhere.
Right, right. And then there's another one that Art had on one night. What's the name of it?
I just had it last night.
It starts with an S. Yeah, it makes this weird sound. It's basically a white noise.
It's a Spiritcom.
Spiritcom, yeah. If you took any of these gadgets to a place where the physics was amplified, So the signal, you know, like in radio, if you have an amplifier, you have a faint signal, you build an amplifier and you make it bigger. I think what Coral Castle will do is not only be able to contact Ed, if this is real physics, but also anybody, that just by being in the right place, an amplifier at that location with that 1,100 tons of limestone surrounding us, we might get some extraordinary new information.
Well, stick around. We're going to have phone calls with Richard C. Hoagland when we come back. We'll also get Richard to update us on some of his projects that he's working on. Don't forget, Saturday night, a total lunar eclipse. Last one was 3 years ago. Don't miss it. Boy, here in Houston, it is so clear. I wish we were having it tonight. I'll be back in a moment. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM, live from Houston, Texas. Okay, on weekends, of course, Saturday night, 6 p.m. Pacific time until 10 o'clock, Coast to Coast Live with Ian Punnett. And Ian, before you tell us about our program on Saturday, Red Elk says you stood him up three times. That's not like you.
Hey, long-time listener, first-time caller. Thank you so much, George, for having me on.
You are welcome.
Well, even the way you phrase that just catches my ear. I mean, I got about, I don't know, half a dozen emails from people saying, how could you do that to Red Elk? I didn't do that to Red Elk. I don't know what the heck he's talking about.
He was on the program.
I heard.
And he just, he's, you know, first of all, he started to compliment you, and then he got mad at you.
Yeah.
And then he says, well, Ian missed me three times on three appointments. And
well,
so it's not that he's going to put some kind of hex on you or anything. That's not his style.
Well, I don't. I mean, I'm rather fond of him, so I was really caught off by that. And
yeah, and I know that's not like you, so...
Well,
you
it didn't happen. I mean, it's not a matter of not like me. I mean, it just... it was just weird to hear him say such a thing, and I think it was a... I don't know, a plea for...
Maybe he wants you to get together with him.
Yeah, well, that you know, how often does that strategy work? When someone does that for you, does that make you want to pick up the phone?
Yeah, right.
I mean, no, I was going out to the Northwest to look at a property, and I told him, you know what, I'm going to come in and I'm going to look in on you. I'm going to stop in, and I'm going to be taking a trip coming up, and I'm going to stop by. And I said, and I even knew the month that I was going to be coming by, but I didn't have a date. And as we got closer to that time, he had emailed in a couple of times and said, when are you coming? And I said, you know, it doesn't look good, but I said, if it will be, it will be this. As it turned out, it was a piece of property that somebody in my wife's family wanted us to buy, and we got closer to that date, and we just couldn't do it. So we never had a date. We just had a kind of a month window.
Well, thanks for clearing that up.
And that's all it was. And then I said, well, maybe 6 months from now, you know, and I said, like, maybe January, we'll come back and we'll do it. If we do it, I would love to stop in and see you. And I meant it. But, I mean, I hate the description he has of him standing by the front door for a month waiting for me to stop by.
Where are you, Ian?
It's not certainly not how it happened on this end.
Okay, now you've used up all your promo time. So what are you doing Saturday?
Oh, you can't have that happen because it's too much of a good show. And it's my birthday. I'm looking forward to seeing you next week, by the way, in Los Angeles.
Yeah, we will get together.
Tomorrow night.
I won't stand you up three times.
See, now there you go. This becomes the running joke, it's going to absolutely break my heart. So the tomorrow night, we have three people on. A doctor who made a history of experimenting on himself. We'll just leave that there for the first part.
All right, that's a good tease.
An investigator into 9/11. That makes the claim that he can prove that it was a large insurance scam.
All right.
Limited to a couple of mafia and business types who were able to use planes by remote control. And then also a pilot with a major American commercial airline who will be on with him at one point into the conversation to talk about how, indeed, there are these major airlines that have planes that can be flown by remote control, and that there are planes, and I just got a little glimpse of this, so I don't have all of the info on it, but that these planes also now come with a self-destruct button.
I did not know that.
And that explains what happened over the Indian Ocean. Remember when the plane just disappeared? That somebody hit that button, and that button is there as in like an anti-9/11 device.
Interesting.
To keep a plane from going into a building again. I know that sounds crazy, but we'll give it an airing. Okay. We'll see what's there coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast Live.
You got it. Cutting edge. Thanks, Ian, and I'll see you this weekend.
All right, buddy. Looking forward to it.
6 p.m. Pacific time to 10 p.m. on most stations all across the United States. Now, when we come right back, we'll take your phone calls and finish up our discussion with our science advisor and the head of the EnterpriseMission.com, Richard C. Hoagland. I'm George Norrie, and I'll be back in a moment. Richard, what projects are you working on these days?
Well, we did the expo in Los Angeles, and we recorded something like 10 hours of video. And what I'm trying to do is to put together our own editing suite. I've had such bad luck and bad experiences with trying to hire editing outside of what we do.
Sure.
Mainly because I think of the controversial nature of what it is that we're putting together. So I'm trying to raise support and raise funds to put together a state-of-the-art editing suite here in New Mexico, which includes computer and tape decks and software and, you know, all the accoutrements that one needs to do a first-rate job to put out a professional product. So we can get a lot of the information that we have on film in the archive onto DVDs and get it out to people at a really reasonable price so people can see what this research is all about. Because people these days don't read. I don't know whether you've noticed, George, but they listen to radio, they listen to you, they listen and watch television, or they watch DVDs, you know, the plasma screens, the HD format has made viewing television or DVDs at home much more, you know, experiential vis-a-vis the theater experience than it ever used to be. And so there's an extraordinary opportunity to put this material out there for an audience that can't see it in the mainstream. I mean, I did something for the National Geographic some months ago, and frankly, it was what you'd expect. It was, you know, a few minutes. It was a lot of other voices. It was not, you know, adequate allowance for rebuttal.
Right.
And so we just need to do this ourselves. So that's a major enterprise project. So if anybody wants to send us the resources to do this, it will redound to your benefit overwhelmingly because I've got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of data and images and extraordinary explanations and graphics and animations that I can't get out there because, frankly, the commercial editing situation has become untenable.
I have got some friends in San Antonio who have a mammoth editing facility, and I think they would love to work something out with you. And when I get back to Los Angeles, call me Monday, and I'll get you in touch with them, okay?
All right, excellent. That's an excellent option.
I mean, look at that first.
We will definitely look at that first, but if people want to help us with doing it ourselves, which means we don't have to be beholden to anybody, they either, you know, send us a note at enterprisemission.com or they send us a fax at the fax number, which is 505-332-1164. Or they can send us, you know, something in the mail at our address, which is, let's see, P.O. Box 22008, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87154.
All right, we'll get this done for you. Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Is Dave?
Yeah, I don't know who it is, but
Dave
I know it's you.
Dave is not here right now. He just stepped out.
Go ahead. Where are you calling from?
St. Louis.
Oh, all right.
The homeland, yeah. I had a couple of questions for Richard.
Okay.
With all the evidence from the pictures, the recent pictures from Mars, have you changed your opinion on the face on Mars? And the second question was, with all those hundreds of hours of information you've got, will you ever have a TV program, maybe a weekly program to get some of that information out to us?
Very good. Thank you, Dave. Two good questions, Richard. First of all, your opinion on your Cydonia face on Mars?
Just the opposite. The more data we see, the firmer I'm convinced that there was an ancient civilization that somehow had something to do with us. And our main impediment is the politics of NASA and the politics of ESA and the other space agencies in literally telling us the truth. I've been looking in the last 24 hours, coincidentally, some of it triggered by, you know, your own inquiries, George, when you sent me a couple of those images.
Yes.
I've been looking at some of Newcomb's new imaging of Cydonia. Dr. Newcomb is the principal investigator of the Mars Express mission with the German research agency, the German space agency.
What a name, too.
Yeah, isn't it? Yes. and he has put out quietly, buried in the ESA archive, some really high-resolution color data of Cydonia. In fact, it's the best damn data, I can say that on the air tonight.
Well, you can get away with that.
That I have seen.
That's about it.
That I have seen of Cydonia since we've been getting data. And that includes Dr. Malin's super-duper camera on Mars Observer, which, of course, no longer, Mars Surveyor, which doesn't exist anymore. It kind of died a strange death back in November, which almost makes it look as if Newcomb is telling us the truth. And Dr. Malin has been fudging his pictures.
Interesting. And, now, what about, go ahead.
Well, as part of this Mars program that you and I discussed by email, I'm going to be assembling some of this and putting it in a format, again, on Enterprise, where people with computers can see this. But again, a lot of your audience, George, does not have computer capability. It's kind of funny in the 21st century, but they simply don't. They do have the capability of playing DVDs. So without going to the huge political problem of a weekly television show or a daily television show, if I can just edit this material with my own, you know, voice, my own take on things, and put it out there in reasonably priced DVDs, that is a way to reach a mass audience. I mean, Michael Moore proved that you can say some very important political things without going through the conventional distribution system and structure.
Sure.
So that's the objective in the short term. In the long term, who knows what could happen? Because as part of our LA experience, and I think we touched on this in that touch-and-go dinner, you know, guys, having dinner with George Norrie is like watching an aircraft being launched off the JF Kennedy. He comes in for a landing. The arrest ropes stop the plane. He leaps out, gulps down his foods, dashes back to the plane, and is shot off the carrier into the studio to do the program. And you basically say, hi and bye.
And you can't find me after I leave.
That was the quickest dinner you and I have ever had the other night.
I know.
And I must say, Tom, it was nice having Tom there.
Yeah.
But we, as part of that experience, as I briefly got a chance to say to you in five words, we apparently have some interest now back on the Hollywood movie front in the film script that I and Paul Davids wrote so many years ago, vis-a-vis Cydonia and our experience and the research and the implications and all that. And we're literally waiting for one key executive producer to read the script. Everybody else has read the script and loves it. But, of course, in Hollywood, you're always waiting for that one guy. So we're waiting for that one guy. And if that comes to pass, we may actually be at the beginnings of a real deal, finally,
correct,
after only 10 years.
That's exciting. At least you don't give up. West of the Rockies, you're on with Richard C. Hoagland on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Thank you. Thank you, Ken from Salt Lake City.
Hi, Ken.
A comment. I'd first like to hear a conversation between Einstein and your guest there. That'd be fun with one of those boxes.
I was going to say, we're going to have to use Frank's box.
I would love it.
That would be a great conversation in the show. Question, though, is I used to play a lot in the river when I was growing up, and if you put a rock in the middle of a river, you have a hole behind that rock if the river's flowing downstream. Everything will come around that rock and over the top of it, and then it creates what they call a hole, and the water will go out further away from the rock. If you're familiar with that concept.
Oh, yeah. I used to do that myself. We had a river. We had a creek, actually, where there was a railroad trestle that used to cross it. We would go up on the trestle and jump into the swimming hole.
Right.
When my mother found out about that, she grounded me for like a month.
Well, yeah, so same kind of mom. Question, though, is in space, if you believe in the Big Bang, I'm just curious if the Big Bang is flowing outward and you had a piece of mass out there that you couldn't see, over that piece of mass, would that create a black hole, like something going over the mass and then everything coming back around and surrounding it, creating a black hole? Is that a possibility?
Well, you're basically talking about a vortex situation, and the problem with your metaphor is that in the classic Big Bang, it isn't, you know, material blasting into space past other material. It's space itself which is expanding. So So the river is expanding at exactly the same rate as the current is flowing, to keep with your metaphor. So there would be no pockets of decreased density and no increased density, and ergo no black holes. But it was a very nice idea.
First-time caller line, you're up with Richard C. Hoagland. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Don in Tremont, Utah.
Hi, Don. I'd
like to say hi to my neighbor down there in Salt Lake City. His idea of a hole behind a rock in a riverbed is a little offline. It's more the idea that you'd have in a sailboat with a negative pressure area from one sail to another. Anyway, to the point, we were talking earlier about the possibility of life in space with Mr. Hoagland, and I keep coming back to the same thought on it. If we can have life in the Arctic in bacterial form, why can't we have life on Io under the seas, the same type, bacterial? It's hard for me to believe that we couldn't.
Well Tom, I agree, and Richard, I'm sure you do too.
Back when I wrote the original piece, which was a very careful scientific investigatory piece with references and all that, I proposed that the brownish stuff along the cracks on the surface of Europa is actually evidence of microbes that have been erupted up through cracks in the ice from the ocean underneath, kind of splayed out on the icy surface, and then irradiated by the radiation storms from Jupiter into discontinuous atoms and brown gunk. And what we're seeing is the residuum of formerly organic microbial life in a desiccated state. Now, fast forward the film. A few years ago, some biologist somewhere came up with the same idea. Of course, it didn't reference me, and proposed it in a major scientific piece. Well, one of the observations that the New Horizons spacecraft was going to conduct as it flew by Europa a couple days ago and stored the images and the data in the spacecraft for replay in the next several weeks is exactly that kind of a study, to see if the spectral signature of those brownish streaks and spots on the surface could in fact be, in essence, the radiation-spattered bodies of millions of microbes erupted up from the oceans underneath the ice. So it's an excellent question, and maybe if NASA's honest, they'll let us know if they get a positive result.
Richard, I wish we could take more phone calls with you. We're out of time for them. I'll sit down and we'll just chat a little bit as we get up to the top of the hour. But I've got to tell you, this is a simple delight in a lot of people. While I was signing the book, or just pictures for a lot of people here in Houston, asked about you specifically.
Aww.
And
they
was kind of neat.
About Robin?
Well, no, they asked about you.
Because Robin also saw you briefly at L.A. at our dinner. And,
yeah, I know. Don't let her feel left out. But, I mean, you've got a lot of fans here in Houston, Texas. I wanted you to know that.
Well, the feeling is mutual. I really appreciate our Coast family, and I don't say it enough, but, you know, art started, and you have continued, a unique, extraordinary, positive experiment in broadcasting in this nation. And in these critical times, I mean, you allude to the idea that we have tough times coming, and I would tend to agree with you in principle, but I think this audience and the mindset that all of us together have created, which is we can overcome problems if we focus consciously. I mean, I'm sitting here tonight talking to you because of all this audience input and basically love when I had my extraordinarily deep problem with a heart attack. That kind of coherence on the part of this audience makes me really warm to every one of the people who's listening to us. And so that feeling definitely, George, is mutual.
Very good. Richard, thanks. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Richard C. Hoagland, enterprisemission.com. When I come back, we will have almost Full Moon Friday open lines, plus a special hotline. It's the Grim Reaper hotline. Somebody in Houston saw the Grim Reaper, gave me a great idea. So for that line, the Grim Reaper hotline, that's 818-817-0021. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.